Ladies and gentlemen, let us call to order this Thursday, February 9th, 2017 meeting of the Northern Virginia Transportation Authority to order. Ms. Spear, would you please call the roll?
Chairman Nowy.
Thank you.
Chair Randall.
Here.
Chairman Bulova.
Here.
Chair Fassett.
Here.
Mayor Silverberg.
Here.
Mayor Parrish.
Here.
Mayor-elect Meyer.
Here.
Councilmember Snyder.
Here.
Mayor Rochelle.
Here.
Senator Black. Delegate Hugo. Delegate Minshew.
Here.
Woo! Ms. Hines. Here. Mr. Cole. Mayor Burke.
Here.
Ms. Cuervo.
Here.
Mr. Horsley.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, we have one.
Thank you very much. Let the record first show that this is for our first time ever, have a successful call-in participation.
Yeah, good.
Where both the law and the technology cooperated fully. Of course, the call-in person is the person who crafted the law that makes it possible. So we would assume he would know how to do it right. Also, just another new welcome this month. Congratulations to David Meyer, who has been a member of the PCAC in the past, but is the mayor-elect of the city of Fairfax. So technically tonight is serving as an alternate for outgoing temporary mayor Strombrus, but who made it very clear last month that no matter who won the election, he wasn't coming back tonight. Well, congratulations, David, for your victory, and welcome aboard. And with that, we have the minutes of first action item, the minutes of the January 12th meeting. Send out in advance. Any questions, comments on those?
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Parrish, seconded by Ms. Bulova. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Thank you, Mr. Mitchell. Thank you very much. Those are approved unanimously. Does anyone want to be recorded as an abstention on that? Randy, you want to be recorded as an abstention?
Yes.
Was I present for that meeting, Mr. Chairman? If you would, please note me in my abstention.
Well, Mr. Vinch is an abstention. I guess Mr. Meyer is an abstention as well.
Yes.
Okay. So, presentations. Survey update. Ms. Backman.
So, Mr. Chairman, in the fall of 2015, we actually conducted a benchmark survey, which served as the kickoff to the update of transaction. And as part of this benchmark survey, we were trying to really gauge two things. Number one, the public's perception on transportation, what they think are the transportation needs of the region, and really how are we doing as a region in trying to address these issues. And number two, we really wanted to know if the public knew about the Northern Virginia Transportation Authority. So here we are, a year or so later, we did a tracking survey as a follow-up, and we have Mr. D. Alsop and Keith Jasper from my staff here to go over the presentation.
I will say very little. Dee is CEO and managing partner of Reston-based Heart and Mind Strategies, and they are a member of your transaction consultant team led by AECOM. I'll hand over to Dee to go through the presentation.
Thank you for having me here. I'll go over this, and I think you have it in front of you, and as we go through it, if you do have pressing questions, go ahead and ask me so we can clarify it as we go through. If not, then we'll address some questions at the end. As was mentioned, this study was done just at the end of last year, about 1 year after the original study was done. So it gives us a chance to look at some changes in terms of people's priorities on transportation, how they perceive it affects their quality of life, and just overall change in awareness and familiarity about transaction and MBTA. The sample size is a respectable 600 interviews, and in translating in terms of plus or minus, if there's a change that you see here that's more than 4 percentage points, that means it's something that couldn't have happened by chance. So there's something real that's going on here. So just note that as we go through, and I'll highlight some of those that really make sense and some that I think merit some attention. The other thing, we did the interviews, we did them in a way that they were representative across the region, most of them coming out of Fairfax County, but still a good number from Arlington, Prince William, and Loudoun County as well. I'm going to skip over these written slides and give the summary and jump right to some of the key findings. Also, next week, there will be a release of the complete study with all the findings that will be in there for your review. Tonight, we're just going over some of the main findings. First thing we ask people when we talk to them, before we bring up transportation, we ask them about what's impacting their quality of life here in the Northern Virginia area. And what you see on this page that I have up in front of you is their prioritization of those things that are impacting their quality of life. Right at the top of that list are things that have to do with traffic congestion and transportation and the need to improve transportation options. That's even more so than housing priorities or things that have to do with the economy and jobs. That is unusual for most regions. It's unusual, clearly, for the rest of the country, but even metropolitan regions, to have that high focusing on traffic is a bit unusual. I will just mention, because Keith did mention, we do a lot of work for the American Public Transportation Association at the national level, so I look at a lot of this data across the country and make some of those comparisons. Go with me to the next one. This is simply just tracking people who we call influential. Those are people who are very interested about transportation and issues related to transportation in Northern Virginia, and those that are that follow those issues fairly closely. So they're informed and interested. And a couple of things here to point out. First, if you look at the bottom, that 57%, that's the number of people who are interested and informed. Now, I'll tell you, on other issues like healthcare or issues related to like the debates that you watch when you turn on the news every night, like the Supreme Court or things like that, the number who are interested and informed on those is usually about 15 to 20%. So the fact that in this region on an issue like transportation, you're getting over half the people who are closely following this and interested, I think highlights to you the importance of the work that you do and the priority that it has for people in the region. Secondly, if you look at 2015 compared to 2016, you see a fairly significant increase, more than what could have happened to chance, in terms of those people who are interested and in those informed. And if you look at some of the data that I'll show you in just a few minutes, there was a lot going on in this region in transportation, on infrastructure, and then some of the priority projects and issues, and people were paying attention, is basically what you see from this. Overall, if you look at transportation and its impact on the quality of life, if you look at it on a scale of life where zero is the worst possible impact and 10 is the highest, best quality of life of public transportation in overall in your life, you see it's very mediocre in terms of how they're rating it, right in the middle of that scale. And that's not much different than it was a year ago. It's interesting, though, that the people who are seeing and rating the quality of their public transportation and the quality of impact it has in their life are the ones who are more informed, who are more aware of MBTA and also more aware of transactions. So it's interesting that the people who are following the issues, more deeply involved in them, are also reflecting a higher rating overall in terms of how they look at the impact of public transportation on their quality of life.
Is this an order?
Excuse me?
Is this an order? Are the respondents in order, or are they just random? So people who resonate to rate quality of life higher, is that in any order?
Ask the question more directly. She's hoping to find out that living in Loudoun is more important than that.
We already know that.
That was fair. I was trying to, too.
Did you also notice that Loudoun County is an influencer?
I did. I knew that already. So,
so as you can...
Noted.
Another thing we looked at was just the number of people who are commuting to work, and you probably have other data that show this, but based on the self-reports in this study, about 2 out of 3 are. And interestingly, we asked them about their commute time. And on average, the fastest it takes people to get to work is an average of about 24 minutes. In worst case, they say the slowest is about 55 minutes on the high end. That's the range. And then we also asked people, what's the maximum acceptable commute on average? And that's about 36, 37 minutes. which is, importantly, higher when than what their normal commute is. In other words, their normal commute is comfortably lower than what they find as the maximum acceptable commute time that they have in the region. And he also looked at a number of things, particularly in terms of what's at the top of their mind that comes to their attention when we give them an opportunity to talk about things that are going on in transportation. And on this page here, I want to draw your attention first to the upper right-hand corner. This just compares 2015 to 2016 in terms of, are the balance of things that people are getting their attention more positive or more negative? And you can see that it's almost 2-to-1 more negative things about what's going on in transportation than positive. And that has not changed at all over the last year in terms of the overall balance. What's interesting are the types of things that they're mentioning. And very specifically, on the positive side, the most frequent things that they are mentioning are things that are happening with WMATA and Metro. About 1 in 3 of all the positive things that they're mentioning have to do with that. Many of them are actually talking about this, you know, SafeTrax is something that is addressing a problem, but it gets mentioned as a positive thing. Even though there's disruptions and delays, it's getting attention in a positive way for things that are happening on the Metro. Other mentions having to do with the roads, I-66, and some having to do with the buses. The differences between where the number of mentions in each of these categories from last year to this year aren't enough to really talk a lot about. On the negative side, again, at the top of the list are things that are happening at Metro and WMATA, and this has gone up a bit from where it was over a year ago. There are a lot more focus in terms of their concerns and their negatives that have to do with that. And there's comments there about the delays, about different things that are still happening there that concern them, and that really is one of the primary focuses of nearly 2/3 of all the negative comments have to do with Metro and WMATA. Are some about I-66 and some other road mentions and traffic congestion and tolls, but it really is what's going on with Metro. Another interesting thing we look at is just simply, and this is in fact one of the key things that we're trying to track, is just how many people have heard of NDTA and how many have heard of the Transaction Long-Range Transportation Plan. You can see that the change from 1 year to the next in terms of awareness about NDTA is negligible, almost no difference. But interestingly, if you look at transaction, and a lot of work I do is in the area of promotion, communications, and building awareness about policy and things like that, and quite frankly, there's not a lot of news and attention that is and money that's dedicated to pushing awareness about transaction. So when we first started this, I was skeptical to expect that there'd be a lot of movement here. But in fact, this amount of movement is 7-point change is clear, and something real is happening here. People are paying more attention to it. And granted, 15% is not a big number, but this is showing you that something as real is happening here in terms of greater awareness and familiarity with the transaction program. We want to move now and talk about an area of what it is that is most personally relevant about transportation and the lives of people in terms of the things that you're responsible for, namely the convenience, the transportation options, the infrastructure, the flow and congestion of traffic, etc. There's a couple of interesting things you'll see on this chart. First, there is a year, in both years, the primary focus is on traffic flow and congestion. That shouldn't surprise you based on what I showed you with that very first slide about overall what most impacts people's quality of life. 1 out of 3 people say it is traffic. So when you focus strictly on transportation, it's not surprising to see that one at the top of the list. What you do see is that's dropped 6 points year over year. And most of the attention in that particular area is concerns or negatives or frustrations in terms of how that's impacting them. But if you go to the far right, if you look at transportation options and transportation infrastructure, those are more positive things that people are seeing And you're seeing positive improvements in terms of the number or the proportion of people who have an influence coming from a greater number of transportation options and improvements in the transportation infrastructure, about a 9-point gain there overall. So again, real cannot be happening because of chance, but some real positive changes that are happening there that are beginning to change the conversation in terms of people when they talk about transportation in the region. On each of those same four areas, we ask people, how is the region doing in terms of their performance and the job? As you can see on traffic flow and congestion, kind of 3-point change, not much difference there. Convenient access, again, a little bit of improvement there, about 5 points, which is statistically more than what would have happened by chance. Transportation options, it's about the same as what it was. What's notable is the 25 point, which is, you know, just almost tectonic in terms of its size in a study of this type. The amount of change in terms of people's perceptions and positive ratings of the job that's being done with regard to transportation infrastructure. As we look in the specific comments that people are making, it's not coming from one thing. We basically trace it to 4 different things. It's the changes that are happening on I-66. It's the changes that are happening that people are mentioning on I-395. It's the Silver Line, and it's also Safe Track. Those are the 4 things people are mentioning on infrastructure that they're paying attention to, they're noticing, and they're giving you higher ratings in terms of overall job performance because of that. Keep in mind that job performance over a year ago was negative, and that's turned now into a clear, decisive positive. The other thing that we look at, and this one, I'm glad you have it in front of you, it'll be easier to read, is just what are the priorities in the region? And this may be a chart you want to come back to because there's a lot going on here. And we rate these about a dozen different priorities on 2 different metrics. One is how important each of them are and how well are we doing on each of them. And I want to point out a couple things. If you look at those orange lines, the dark line is where how well you were doing on each of those over a year ago, and the light line is how well you're doing this year. On almost every one of those priorities, if you look at 2015 compared to just last year, 2016, there's been improvement. That light line is higher almost on every one of them, and it's significantly higher on predictability of trip times, new public transportation options and increasing public transportation routes, and locating new growth near transit. People are paying attention to things that are happening in this area, and they're giving you a positive improvement on the job performance on each of those. That's worth noting and consistent with the overall story and the feedback that we're getting here. In terms of overall performance for planning and implementing transportation solutions for Northern Virginia, you'll see that there is a negative rating, poor and fair. This is consistent with other regions in terms of how they look at their long-range planning and transportation planning. If people are always wanting it better, and they're typically giving the negative evaluation and positive on the whole. But you do see a little bit of improvement in the year-over-year improvement for Northern Virginia. Particularly in the, if you look at it, it's 3 points, it's just borderline and being statistically significant. And on MBTA, the point I would make is that if you look at just those that are saying excellent, that's up 3 points, which again is just borderline, but it does show that directionally it's in the right direction. Just a couple of things to wrap up here and going a little bit looking into the future. This is a simple exercise that you're looking at now on page 30, on page 23, in which we allow people to look at if you had to invest in transportation infrastructure improvements, what proportion would you spend on each of these 4 different areas? And a couple of interesting points to make. Roads is clearly the biggest, but measures to incentivize less driving at peak times, which is also a load in traffic type of thing, is also, it's number two. You put those together and they're basically spending 60% of your budget on those two types of things. And it's interesting to me that they're wanting to spend nearly a fifth of the budget just on incentives in terms of motivating people to drive at different times, which is, you know, in terms of how the budget actually gets spent, I don't expect it's like that. But that's reflects their priority that they would put on that. Bicycle and pedestrian, 13%, and then rail and transit, a good proportion at about. We're going to shift now into some kind of ancillary things. We asked this question a year ago as well. What word or phrase would you describe your overall feeling of self-driving cars being on the roads in Northern Virginia? This word cloud, the size reflects the frequency of mention of these different terms. When we did this a year ago, the tone and tenor of this vocabulary was not as negative, not as what you're seeing now. There's been a number of accidents and things have gotten attention. So people are looking at it on the whole as more scary and dangerous rather than safe and good. So that's just a little feedback on that. Then interestingly, we also looked at some of these alternative types of transportation. And we looked at Uber, Lyft, Zipcar, taxi, and Capital Bike Share. Several interesting things here. The penetration of trial or usage with Uber and Lyft is quite significant. Nearly one out of every two people in your region have used these types of transportation. And not only that, if you look at and project out in the future, are you going to be increasing or decreasing? Most people are saying they're going to be increasing that. So that's a very significant change in terms of mode of transportation. Zipcar, similar, penetration is a lot lower in terms of people actually find use to do that, 8%, but still, that's a popular thing and will continue to trend in a positive way. At the taxi industry, fewer people are using taxi than are using Uber and Lyft in our region. That is a major shift in just a very short period of time. And then look at what the future is. Decreasing is a little more than 2-to-1 in terms of the probability of where that would go. Last thing I wanted to draw your attention to, because bike share has been a new phenomenon. Generally, it seems to be popular and well used, but there's something going on there that I would encourage you. We just didn't ask the right questions. We didn't know this might be an issue. We didn't ask them, but I'd encourage somebody to try to figure out what's going on. The fact that you've got 1 out of 3 bike share users saying that they're not likely to do it again or their usage is going to decrease. And if that's my business, I would be concerned about it, particularly if something as new as that. There's something going on there. I would encourage you to look at that. Then the very last one I'm going to share with you tonight is just simply, as you look at it, your 2040 plans and the number of cars on the road just for shopping and running errands to go pick up things and buy things, that audience is changing significantly as well. You've got you've got 3 out of 4 people who are now, instead of going to the store and buying things, are buying things online. And you have nearly half of them that are doing that at least on a weekly basis. And so that's going to continue to grow in terms of the overall impact of people who are now just having things delivered to them rather than getting on the road to pick up things for themselves. So let me entertain any questions you might have at this point.
This was all self-reporting.
What's that?
This was all self-reporting.
This was, yes, people telling us their own answers on this rather than us measuring their actual behavior.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. I guess I have one question that relates to that chart right there. I just want to make sure that I understand it. I'm looking at the far right, where it talks about express lanes. It is where the bottom two lines cross.
Yeah.
So help me make sure that I'm understanding that correctly.
So what you're seeing is, just kind of think of the blue lines and the orange lines as measuring two different dimensions on the same thing. So the blue tells me that very, very few people see that as an important priority. only about 15% see that, or 17% this year, see express lanes and dynamic pricing as an important priority for the region. And yet overall, in terms of how well are you doing on that, you're getting about that same number, about 15% that are saying that overall you're doing an okay job in how you're managing that.
What I was interested in is what Virginia is doing well in 2015 and 2016 reversed. Every other item on the list is higher for 2016 than 2015, except for that.
Yeah.
Help me with that.
Two things there. One, I'd be a little careful because it's just 2 percentage points.
It's not much.
And that's not much. So I wouldn't overinterpret that.
Okay.
But I like to kind of look at the direction things are going. It's the one that's kind of counter to everything else there. So my guess is there's maybe something there. My experience would say there's something there. Maybe it wasn't all that people was expected that it would be, that it's still, like on my trip down here, you know, I don't hate to use personal experience. I used the dynamic pricing, and I was not much faster than the other lanes. So I think maybe expectations might be related to that. I don't know. I'm just speculating.
Thank you. Just curious.
This is slide 23, my chart. And I had, I did see this before, and I looked at this one, and when you described this one, 23, that one. When you described this, you made a point of saying that the 38 and 21 were about roads, and that's very odd because when I saw the orange, the first one, measures to incentivize less driving, I thought of transit, it being pro-transit. So, unless there's more to how it was described, I actually interpreted it quite differently than you did.
Okay, that's a fair,
fair point.
On your first page, you have where you did the questioning. Did you do any of the towns? Were they included in any of these, or was it explicitly the what was the group?
There would be towns, for example, in Loudoun County where we did a lot of interviewing in. We just didn't list individuals' counties. We just aggregated them up if they were in that county. Same thing with Fairfax and others. So there'd be many of those towns that they were from.
I just want to be able to answer the question. Was Leesburg included?
Yes, Leesburg was included.
All right, thank you.
I live up in Luckett's.
Oh, okay.
So.
Oh, fantastic.
Another question.
I don't know if Luckett's was included, though. It's pretty small.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Great to be with you. Good luck to all you're doing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, we have an update from COG about the multi-sector working group. Mr. Shrikant.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the board, for this opportunity to brief you on some updates to the activities going on at COG. I was last here in front of this body sometime September, October of 2015. There's been some work going on. This is the work of led by COG that's been done over a two-year period with a partnership with the Transportation Planning Board and the Metropolitan Washington Air Quality Committee. So I'll try to bring you up to speed on where we are today. The good news is just last month, the work was concluded. So what I will be presenting to you is the outcome of this almost two-year-long effort. And I would like to recognize Erin Murrow, my colleague, who worked on this, and not just on this one, but also the very first detailed work that the Transportation Planning Board did related to greenhouse gases and climate change back in 2010. It was a scenario analysis that the TPB called What Would It Take? Okay. Just starting off with some quick background, what is this effort that was done over 2+ years? A COG board acting on a recommendation or a request from two of the other policy boards in this region, Metropolitan Washington Air Quality Committee and the Climate, Energy, Environment Policy Committee, wrote to COG back in October of 2014 and asking COG to undertake a study to examine what sorts of strategies could the member jurisdictions in this region implement to advance the region's goals of reducing greenhouse gases within this region. Back in 2009, COG board adopted a set of aspirational goals to reduce greenhouse gases in this region. Those are listed at the bottom of this slide. Generally, by 2050, the region aspires to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by about 80% below the 2005 levels. That's the goal, and there's an interim goal of reducing it 20% below 2005 levels by 2020, which is almost upon us. So those had been goals that had been established, but the recent request to COG was, could you identify specific strategies that our member jurisdictions could take that would help achieve some of this greenhouse gas reduction? So because these greenhouse gas emissions are contributed by multiple sectors, by the energy sector, by the buildings and the what we generally call the built environment, and by land use, and obviously by transportation. Those were the four large sectors from within which emissions of all kind emanate, particularly greenhouse gases. So the COG board established a multi-sector working group to explore what sorts of strategies could be implemented, but more importantly, what was the potential of each of those strategies to reduce those emissions? By how much would it reduce? Because this exercise was focused towards achieving that goal, making some substantive contribution towards the region achieving its long-term goals. I want to at this time take the opportunity to thank all of you for allowing your technical staff to participate in this exercise. It was over 2 years, as I said. We had a group of excellent consulting companies that had experience in working on climate change and greenhouse gases. So over a two-year period, your technical staff collaborated regionally with staff and consultants and identified a whole host of strategies which the consultants evaluated and tried to quantify what would it take and how much emission reductions those strategies would develop. And the sectors was transportation, land use, energy, and environmental. Here is the gist of the finding. The analysis indicated a little bit about the graph on the right side of the slide. On the bottom axis, on the x-axis towards the left, line at the bottom corresponds to the goals of the region. As I said, the goal is to be below 2005 levels. By 2050, the region aspires to be 80% below the emissions that were there in 2005. So that bottom line corresponds to that goal. The very top line corresponds to business as usual. If there were no emission reduction strategies put elsewhere, whether it is your energy saving devices or whether it is fuel technology in automobiles or whether it is improved HVAC systems in the buildings and in the homes, if none of them had happened, where would the greenhouse gas emissions be in this region? That's the very top line. So the analysis established, so that area under the bottom and the top line, that wedge, represents the magnitude of reductions this region would have to achieve to achieve its goal. So the top two shaded areas are emission reduction estimates that we anticipate getting from emission reduction measures that are already on the books. These correspond to energy efficient equipment that we buy for our homes. These correspond to strategies that power generation stations have to adopt to help reduce emission reductions. And these correspond to the fuel technology, the CAFE standards, our vehicles being more efficient. So these are on the books. So it's safe to say, unless something happens, that those reductions are reliable, or there is some degree of certainty that we can realize those. Yeah. So that gets us.
Yeah. I did say that unless something happens.
So it's about a third of our goal could be met on the basis of measures that are currently on the books. Then the question became, what additional strategies could we implement that could provide us with additional reductions? There, the analysis focused on two types of strategies, viable strategies and stretch strategies. Viable strategies were generally defined as strategies or programs or projects that the region jurisdictions could implement based on existing statutory, regulatory, or policy practices. Nothing new, no new law, no new regulations, no new policy would have to be enacted. Then there was another set of strategies that we call the stretch strategy. That is where new policies, new authorities will have to be sought and secured to implement those strategies. So we analyzed a whole number of projects and programs, if implemented, would provide us with another one-third. But the bottom line was, even under the stretch strategies, we would need something above and beyond that to completely reach our goal. And those are where federal strategies might come in handy. That was the general analysis. So these results was presented to the COG board in January of 2015, December of 2015, and it was around October-November timeframe when I presented to the Northern Virginia Transportation Authority these initial findings. And the COG board looked at the findings and they said, okay, this gives us an order of magnitude of what is achievable, what is doable. But they tasked the staff to go back and examine, take a deeper dive into these strategies and to identify a set of strategies that met two criteria. One, they would have to be consensus-based, meaning majority of the jurisdictions, there are 22 jurisdictions in this region, that they would be able to implement them. And secondly, those would have to be based on existing statutory, regulatory, and policy practices. So forget the stretch for the time being. Tell us what is viable under the current environment so that we can focus our energies on getting those underway. That was the task that was given. And the COG board established a policy task force to advise staff on what sorts of strategies staff were to consider as stretch. And members of the task force were selected so that they represented all of the policy boards of this region, the COG board, Transportation Planning Board, MVAC, and the Climate Energy Environment Policy Committee. Many of you around this dais were on the policy task force as well. So the policy task force met January of 2016, and they took a detailed look at all of the analysis. And one of the things they advised us was to survey each of the sector specialists and directors or staff within their individual jurisdictions and to ask them a couple of questions. The questions were, of these strategies that had been analyzed, which of these strategies were consistent with their existing policies? Which of these strategies were implementable within their jurisdiction? So those were the two things. So we worked with the technical staff once again within your jurisdictions. We developed a survey. The survey was done. And we compiled the results of the survey. And here are some of the conclusions, and I will focus on some of the recommendations that came out of the results of the survey. Many of the strategies that had been identified were implementable either by every jurisdiction in the region or by many jurisdictions within the region. So most of the strategies were implementable. There were some set of strategies that the local jurisdictions either did not have the authority or the ability to implement them, but it would have to be done by state or federal entities. But the local jurisdictions could take actions to support the implementation of those strategies. So looking at the results of the survey, there were 22 different groups of strategies that were analyzed. The results of this survey led to a set of recommendations. The recommendations could be in three broad buckets. One, a strategy could be implemented throughout the metropolitan Washington region. The requirement there was the survey results had to indicate that every member jurisdiction in the region could implement this, and there was a supermajority, more than two-thirds of the jurisdictions saying, yes, it was implementable. If a strategy had that sort of a survey response and a survey support, then we would recommend it to be implemented region-wide. The second group of recommendations were strategies that would be implemented within individual localities. That is where some of the jurisdictions in this region could not implement them for any number of reasons. So, but others could. So that fell into that strategy. And the last group were clearly strategies that either the feds or the state would have to implement, but local jurisdictions would support them. Those were the three groups. I won't dwell on the strategies or the recommendations on the other sectors. This is the energy and built environment sector. And as you look at this table, what's on the leftmost side are strategies that have been recommended to be implemented regionally. What's in the middle are strategies to be implemented by individual jurisdictions who have indicated that they can implement them. And what's on the rightmost are strategies that the feds and states would have to consider. These are strategies within land use, and I'll just dwell on this final strategy. These are strategies within the transportation sector. So one of the things that the survey indicated was every jurisdiction in this region could take some action to increase the alternate use of alternate fuel vehicles within the public fleet. Whatever the size of their vehicle or fleets are within the jurisdictions, they could encourage the use of alternate fuel vehicles. So that was something that we felt as regionally implementable. Jurisdictionally implementable are some of these strategies. I'll quickly review them. Projects are programs to improve traffic operations on local roadways. So these are the kinds of strategies where you could either do traffic signal optimization, you could promote strategies that would drive eco-driving techniques, those sorts of things. By the way, all of these strategies, the recommendations were to be voluntarily implemented by the local jurisdictions. The second set of strategies that local jurisdictions could implement, once again, not every one of them, but majority of these jurisdictions in this region, is providing some sort of subsidy for the use of public transportation, in both in the public and private sectors for commuting purposes. Some of these programs are already in place, whether it is MetroCheck or any other forms of subsidies for their employees, implementing more of those, but also promoting its use within the private sector. Then there's a third strategy, which was to increase the frequency and reduce the run times of bus transit within this region. Increasing frequency, obviously, would require additional routes or express services. Reducing runtime, again, different ways, traffic signal priority techniques being used at traffic signals, where appropriate, queue jumping at signalized intersections, and where possible, dedicated bus lines. Those were some of the strategies. Those are some of the implementable actions that jurisdictions could take. And then expanding existing transit fare buy-down. There are currently many transit services do offer reduced pass systems or reduced fares for children or for elderly. That's another kind that could be expanded to a broader use. Promoting zero emission vehicles in private sector fleet. This is once again talks about electric vehicles, electric charging stations, looking at the building codes, looking at parking areas, that sort of thing. And then finally, installing power units at truck stops. That's only one jurisdiction where this is applicable, and that's in Maryland, Frederick. And they had indicated that it could be done. That's the one place where we do have truck stops, where there is, because the trucks keep running, there's a higher amount of emissions there. And on the right are strategies that could be implemented by state and federal entities. So we can come back to this slide if there are any questions. So These were the recommendations based on the survey, and last month the COG board reviewed these and they adopted a resolution, which a couple things that recognized in the resolution. The resolution encourages that individual policy bodies within this region, whether it is Metropolitan Washington Air Quality Committee, or whether it's Transportation Planning Board, or the Climate, Energy, Environment Policy Committee. And by the way, all of the Northern Virginia localities are members of these committees. So here are recommended strategies. They are voluntary at this time. There are no specific amounts of reductions that are associated with any of these strategies. So these are not specific quantified targets at this time, but these are strategies that these policy boards are encouraged to consider as they develop their annual programs to see how they can best implement them, how they can support their member jurisdictions, developing and funding projects and programs that would advance these strategies. That's the essence of the resolution, but before I conclude, I would want to recognize Ms. Bulova, who is the maker of the motion at the COG board meeting, and also one of the earliest members overseeing this work. If there's anything else you would like to add, Ms. Bulova.
Thank you, Kanti, and this is very good work. And I would like to thank you and COG staff for listening to our concern about not trying to do something that was impossible and not achievable, given given our form of government, the Dillon rule state, et cetera, et cetera. And so the call was to look at these recommendations, to work with our staffs, and to make sure that recommendations were realistic and achievable, could be a stretch, could be an ambitious goal, but that we weren't putting something on the table that was not able to be achieved for a number of reasons. So I think that this is good work, and a lot of work took place among our staffs across all of the different disciplines within our jurisdictions, the services that we provide. So again, I thank you for the work that you did, and I think that these final recommendations are things that we absolutely will want to follow through on. So thank you, Kanti.
Mr. Fassett, you were also a member of the policy task force.
There are three or four of us here, right? I think I remember going to meetings early on. I don't remember the later ones, but the process went on for a while, and I know there was a lot of sort of compromise in terms of what the aspirational goals versus the achievable goals, and I think you did a very good job trying to divide it into categories. Just stepping back, looking at the big picture, it's my aspiration that at some point in time, whether through incentives or support from the federal government, when that's possible, that we'll in fact include greenhouse gases as one of the required reduction areas of the Clean Air Act, and that just like we measure through MWAC and are required with the CLRP to meet certain air quality standards, that those standards include the reduction in greenhouse gases. We know that, from my understanding, the courts have sort of deemed that EPA has that authority. And my understanding, too, is that TPB is not restricted, precluded from doing that. It's also true that not many metro areas have done that. And so what we work from is a voluntary effort. Clearly, this region's done a very credible job using the Council of Governments and the Climate, Energy, Environment Policy Committee to educate, sort of enable and support a lot of improvements. And it's also true that with greenhouse gases, most of those improvements aren't transportation. A lot of it is, but it's buildings. It's a lot of other things. So I think this was a step. A lot of it depends upon how much we then take this information back to our localities and embed it and use it to adjust our plans, our own plans. But I do hope that at some point in time, and it's not too far down the road, that in fact we'll be required to make certain reductions, and that our transportation plan will have to incorporate those measures in the choices of projects that we put forward. And we're not there yet, obviously.
Just to pick up on Mr. Fessett's last point, the GPB started in 2010 voluntarily asking staff, before it adopted the long-range plan for the region, to calculate what was happening with the amount of greenhouse gases resulting from the transportation system as represented in the constrained long-range plan. So in 2010, we started doing that. And this chart here shows you for the latest long-range plan that the TPP adopted in 2016, between now and 2040, total greenhouse gases in this region is estimated to go down by 24%. And the per capita, because we are going to be adding almost the size of Philadelphia in this region, 1.3 million people between now and 2040. And even with that addition, the per capita greenhouse gas reductions are estimated to go down by 45%. That's kind of it's a result of a number of things, as Mr. Fessett has said. There are significant reductions coming from the federal standards on fuel that the vehicles use. There are an additional set of standards on the internal engine combustion of these vehicles that we drive. But there is also contributions coming from the land use, the transit-oriented development, which your earlier survey had indicated some of those things. One piece of statistics from the CLRP is close to 3/4 of all of the new jobs forecast in this region are in activity centers, which take up about 7% of the land area of this region. It's about 4,500 square miles. So there's a lot of dense development planned. We are getting there. So some of these 24% gross reduction within greenhouse gases is a result of that. And there's also other contributing factors.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
So, we move on to action items. First item is the approval of the weightings of performance measures for transaction depth date, which is listed for me. And I'm going to look to staff.
Good evening, Chairman Noe, members of the authority. I'm here this evening to talk to you about the weighting of performance measures, and specifically we are asking the authority to approve a recommendation for weightings of the performance measures, and that's outlined in your packet. Just kind of wind the clock back a little bit to December of last year. You'll recall that at that time we asked you to consider the performance measures themselves, and you approved 15 performance measures to be used in transaction. So just a very quick refresher on why we had these performance measures and why tonight we're asking about getting your approval for weighting of these performance measures. Effectively what happens with this combination of weights and measures is that we will integrate this analysis. These will help us to undertake some analysis. It will integrate the HB 599 process into transaction for the first time, and that in turn will help the authority with investment decisions a little bit down the road from where we are now. So this is very exciting for us because it means that we can evaluate everything that's being considered within transaction on an equal basis at the very beginning of the process and not have to revisit an HB 599 evaluation every time you do a funding program. It's all built in at this front end now. So with that background, I'd like to draw your attention to the fold out attachment that's in your packet, multicolored document. The vision statement is across the top, and then the row below that we have the goals, objectives, measures, and then the columns to the right hand side are, with all the numbers in are how we've reached where we are tonight. So essentially looking at the column that is entitled mean, which is the second one in from the right hand side, the mean value there is the mean weighting that's been derived by averaging the recommendations from each of your planning coordination advisory committee, the technical advisory committee, and the transaction subcommittee of jurisdictional staff and agency staff. They each came up with their own recommendations for weights independently of one another. The mean, as I say, is the average of their recommendations. And then to the right of that, the PPC column is the Planning and Programming Committee's recommendation to the authority for the weighting for each major. And as you can see, they're broadly similar to those that are in the mean column, but rounded to the nearest 5 or 10. We rounded to the nearest 5 or 10 in part because it makes it easier to explain what we're doing here. We have 15
Marty
minutes.
Has a really good explanation for that. I remember from the...
You have to have, the advantage of ending things in 5 and 10 is that you get terminating fractions rather than repeating fractions.
Don't have them go there.
Oh, it's really fun. It's really good. I'll ask later.
Our belief is that it will help us to explain this to a pilot.
Yeah,
it is also
try. Just let him do it later.
It's very consistent with what the authority has done in the past with Transaction 2040 and also with funding programs. Essentially, what you have here is 5 of the 15 measures with a weight of 10, and 10 of the 15 measures with a weight of 5. For those of you who love symmetry, you've thrown that one out as a free one. So the important thing here I really like to stress is to not focus too much on the weightings of individual measures. They're grouped in the color-coded bands for each of the three goals that are part of this. And you can see the kind of the subtotals for each of the three goals that are being recommended. So 60% of the weights with goal one, 30% with goal two, 10% with goal three. But I want to actually draw your attention to the columns a little bit back to the left. You see the numbers one, two, or three in circles. The numbers in the circles with the dark background represent the primary goal that's supported by each measure, but then the numbers, also 1, 2, and 3, in the circles with a lighter background, show how those measures also support other goals. So if you look at measure 1.2.2, congestion duration, which is an HP599 measure, you see that primarily that supports goal 1, but it also supports goals 2 and 3 in this case. It's one of a couple of measures which actually support all three goals. So when you look at it, any particular goal, be it goal 1, goal 2, goal 3, you've kind of got to look at the combination of the numbers that are dark backgrounds and those that are in lighter backgrounds. That was something we did as a recommendation from the PPC to try and explain this concept a little bit clearly or more clearly than we were previously, that you should not look at measures just as they stand, but how they work as a group and how they cross over between different goals. So the other thing I just quickly like to point out is all 7 of the measures that were previously used for HB599 are included among the 15 measures. And if you look to the little summations down towards the bottom right-hand corner for that very final column, the PPC column, you'll see that the HB599 measures account for 45% of the total weight and the other measures account for 55%. And that 45% is important because that is the equivalent number, actually it's the same number that was used in the equivalent part of the process for the FY2017 funding program. So in other words, the same weighting is being applied to congestion reduction as has been done in your most recent funding program. So with that, I'll be happy to take any questions.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to put a motion on the table, and then I'd like to speak to it. I move approval of the weightings of the performance measures for the transaction update.
I'll second.
So, we'd just like to mention that there was a great deal of discussion. The little circles that are on here, I think it's very artfully done. Because there was a great deal of discussion about whether or not, for instance, we didn't have enough credit given or enough weighting for the environmental, for instance, area. And so the point was made that, you know, many of these items that appear in other categories, goal one or goal two, also contribute towards the environmental side of things. For instance, let's see, 1.4, which is to improve connections among and within areas of concentrated growth. And then an example of a measure is walkable, bikeable environment within the regional activity center. So that is a goal one, but it also meets the goal three, environmental goals. So we were wondering how staff would be able to respond to our lengthy discussion about, you know, the fact that there is a lot of overlap, and I would just like to compliment staff on doing a good job of indicating how things overlap and contribute towards all of the goals or the different goals, whatever category they're in.
So I would associate myself with Ms. Bulova's comments. This is very well done, and I have one question, and it is about the environmental goal. On section 1.2 under 1.2.1, just curious as to why we didn't also give that a 3 under the indicated goals are supported by each measure, because congestion severity, I would think, would positively impact the environment if you reduce congestion severity. That's the only one that I, when I look at it, doesn't make sense to me as I look across at all the numbers.
Which one is
that? That was, it's 1.2.1.
That's very astute. Thank you. When we looked at which measures supported goals other than the one that they were primarily assigned to, that was one where we put a question mark. We thought it did, but we didn't all agree on it, and so we didn't show it. So it was remiss of me I didn't say this, but the ones where we've shown measures that support other goals were essentially the ones that, as a minimum, we believe support other goals. But we did consider that a case could be made, as you just did, that some of the goals that we didn't show that way, some of the measures that we didn't show that way, could indeed support other goals. So spot on. I actually have a question mark.
It would mess up your synergy, but otherwise... That's why it
throws off the balance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. For about two decades, I've worked to get increased funding for highways and transit and bike-head projects. I recall the predecessor of this group, in the early days, we went to Richmond year after year, and then we got some funding legislation. We implemented that and then had to deconstruct it as a result of the court order. We were back again, and it resulted with this current funding arrangement. To begin with, the way things have evolved, that is successive layers of legislation and increasing metric pile on metric, has meant that, frankly, the citizens of Falls Church are paying more and getting less. So one of our responsibilities is to represent our jurisdictions, and this system is no longer fundamentally functional, nor does it have a value proposition to the citizens of Falls Church that I represent. Of course, our second responsibility is regional and to engage in long-term planning. I find this set of weights insufficiently multimodal. When you compare our actual expenditures, for example, to slide number 23, highways are getting a huge amount greater proportion than our citizens have asked us to do. And the greatest question I have is we're spending this money, and we're spending it, and yet a metro rail deficit of multi-billions of dollars, bus systems, which in some cases are third world, and VRE, which itself is millions of dollars short, where's the money going to come from to pay for all those if we continue with this particular spending pattern? So I have a problem in that our approach has been insufficiently multimodal. Third, I believe that this weighting is insufficiently protective of the environment. Now, why do I say that? Well, this largely relies or claims environmental protection on the basis of building more highways, which, of course, will induce demand, which will increase vehicle miles traveled, which will increase pollution. I don't know of any environmental expert that would say the way to deal with environmental issues and air pollution is to build more highways and encourage more vehicle miles of transportation. Frankly, the way that that's rated, I respectfully disagree with, and I believe that it strains credibility. So for all these reasons, I'll be voting against this. I understand that my colleagues will probably very much disagree. I respect that. I have immense respect for my colleagues, but I can't agree with this weighting for the reasons stated, so I will be voting against it. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. And I want to say just to staff, this is such a balancing act to make this work. I look back to this similar weighting that we did for Transaction 2040, and the attempt to balance the numbers together may or may not have been as intellectually robust as we would have liked. One of the challenges was the weights didn't add up to 100, largely because we used weights that caused non-terminating fractions. So Mr. Fassett's very wise point earlier today. We had a lot of things that you took to significant decimal places. But I think this is imperfect. I mean, to Mr. Schneider's comments, we are not going to come up with the perfect system. I think we're trying to come up with the system that we can make work. This is built largely on the HB 599 process that we have unfolded thus far in cooperation with VDOT, with the hopes of then being able to incorporate that system into this analysis. That system has, over the last 4 years, funded $174 million for Metro, a lot of transit investments, and a lot of highway investments. But this is a step in a process that will lead, frankly, to levels of investment that are still a little hard to imagine, because we're still learning how to do this. But I'm very optimistic that we will have come up over a product that does represent the needs of the region. So with that, if there's any other questions, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Aye.
Thank you, Mr. Menchie. The phrase on delay. Okay, thank you. So a motion carries with one no vote. Thank you very much. Okay, next items. That is back to you. Tell us what this is.
I'm seeking authorization from the board to allow me to submit comments to the Virginia Office of Intermodal Planning and Investment regarding their statewide transportation needs assessment, which will feed into the V-Trans Multimodal Transportation Plan, better known as V-Trans 2025. At January 27th, they came, staff and the consultants from OIPID spoke to the RJAC regarding where they are in the process of doing this update. One thing that I wanted to know, they did state, they being the consultant that's working with OIPI regarding this effort, is that this needs assessment is to serve as a screen for projects applying for consideration under the Smart Scale prioritization process. After they gave the presentation to the RJAC, they did have an open house. They are requesting comments on the needs assessment tier one summary, if you will, which is also in the packet and the draft recommendation. They are asking comments by the end of this month, and because I wanted to get have an ample opportunity to work with the RJAC and the local and agency staff, I'm asking for your authorization to submit comments, because comments are due before your next meeting.
So moved.
By Ms. Parrish.
Second.
Second by Ms. Bulova. And so what I would ask, RJAC, you're going to be seeking input from RJAC in developing the comment.
Yes.
What I'd ask is maybe, you know, they're due on the 28th, so maybe, you know, whenever you have them done before the 28th, if you can send them out to members, just so we can, I don't imagine we're going to have a lot of markup to them, but just that everyone has the opportunity to know what we're commenting on. Any discussion on this matter? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Okay. Next, we have a CMAQ RSDP allocation for 20. Oh, this is not an allocation. This is the 2023 program.
This is the 2023 program, Mr. Chairman. Several years ago, and it's been at least about 7 or 8 years ago, the Commonwealth Transportation Board required us to do our CMAQ and RSTP programming for 6 full years, which covered the life of their 6-year program, instead of annually as the way we were doing it. So this year we are working with MBTA staff, working with your regional jurisdiction and agency coordinating committee staff. They develop recommendations for the programming of CMAQ and RSTP funds for fiscal years 2023. The authorities established a deadline of December 14th, 2016 for the applications to be received. And I do want to note, because this is year 2023, this is an estimate. We're working with VDOT regarding the estimated amount of funds we think that the region will receive in CMAQ and RSTP by 2023. So total, if you look in the staff report, there would be a total estimate of $82.2 million, 29.5 of that are CMAQ funds, and $52.6 million of that are RSTP money. We wanted to get the authorities approval, if you will, on the straw man, as we call it, so that we can submit it to VDOT so that it can go before the Commonwealth Transportation Board, because they are required to approve your programming recommendation so that it can be included in the 6-year program.
I remember when this issue came up several years ago, I would drive down to Richmond to testify on, to provide our comments on whether we should program this money for 6 years. And the only reason I mention that is because it seems strange to think that not long ago there was a time when our biggest concern at MBTA was that the CTB would start messing with the RSTP funds. And now we get RSTP issues on the agenda that end up kind of near the bottom of the list. But anyway.
And Mr. Chairman, if I could, I do want to know on page 2, as we have done every year, there are some regional, well, I shouldn't say regional, but off-the-top projects, if you will. The authority has continued to fund COG TPB's Commuter Connections Operations Center. They fund the MATOC, which is the Metropolitan Area Transportation Operations Coordination. And you continue to fund Virginia DOT, well, the share of Virginia's share of the Clean Air Partners campaign. Also of note, we did include $2 million to reimburse Fairfax County for them giving up $2 million in RSTP funds to fund the Falls Church Bike Share Program.
Questions on this? Any motion?
Second.
Motion by Ms. Randall, second by Ms. Bulova. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Item 9, CMAQ allocation for Prince William County.
Prince William County is requesting a transfer of CMAQ money, $49,829 from the Route 641 project, and $15,695 from the Route 234 shared use path on Country Club Road, and an additional $100,059 from the Gideon Drive sidewalk project. to Powell 3, which is not currently funded under CMAQ. And this is why it requires authority action, because there is no, you've never approved CMAQ monies for the Powell Creek project.
Is there anyone from Prince William Stafford? Okay. What is Route 641? Okay, so before we make a motion on this, I have to disclose for the record that I am the owner of real property in the immediate vicinity of one of the subject properties, but after consultation with the county attorney, I've determined that it does not rise to the level that would cause me to have to recuse myself. We have a motion on this
matter. Mr. Chairman, I've read all the background on this, and I move approval.
Thank you, Ms. Parrish. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Ms. Bullivant. All in favor?
Mr. Chairman, just a quick question. Yeah. Is that to run the highway across your property? Is that...
literally turn right out of my driveway, drive five doors, and hit this project. And we've been going through, you know, design change orders and right-of-way acquisition. You know, when you do a road project, there's so many, like, legislative steps. And like, I think... two meetings ago was the first meeting in over 6 months where I didn't have to make that declaration. You'll notice I can do it from memory.
Yeah. they didn't tell you that they moved the road to go where your house is.
Yeah, that's right. I kind of wish they would at this point.
They moved the house 2 decimal points.
I'll just share the interesting component of it is when I was running for re-election in 2015, a lot of people said to me, Marty, we like you because you're the guy who can help us get transportation money for projects in our county. And then they started building a project in our neighborhood, and all my immediate neighbors hate me now. We're not going to be able to turn left out of our own street. Like, we're able to go to the access road and then up and around the corner to the light and turn left. Yeah, not cool. But thank you for getting me the light. okay. Do we vote on that?
No.
Okay, all in favor, please say aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
Okay, motion carries unanimously. I didn't hear any no's, so I'm just saying you want to override the decision of the chair, you can. Okay, we have a number of appointments to make that are in the discretion of the chair. I'll announce these. Almost all of these are just reappointments of current individuals.
Right. Well, I do want to note the appointment of the chair and vice chair for the statutory committee do require
a vote.
The vote.
Okay.
Of full authority.
So I will seek a motion on item 10, which is to appoint as the chairman of the technical, to reappoint as chair of the technical advisory committee, Randy Boyce, and reappoint as vice chair, Doug Fall.
So moved.
But Mr. Parrish, second by Ms. Bulova, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Thank you. I will now seek a motion on item 11 to appoint to chairman of the Planning and Coordination and Advisory Committee as chairman, Ralph Buona, and as vice chair, who is from Loudoun County, and as vice chair, Linda Colbert from the town of Vienna.
So moved.
Motion by Ms. Randall.
Second.
Second by Mr. Minshew. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Thank you. And the other three are chairman's appointments. So for the record, there's one that's not on the list here. Reappoint to the Finance Committee for a 2-year term, Chairman Bulova and Mayor Rischel. Reappoint to the Governance and Personnel Committee, which is also our Legislative Committee, for a 2-year term, Councilmember Schneider and Delegate Minshew. Reappoint to the Planning and Programming Committee, Chair Randall and myself. And here's another one, is an accepting the resignation from the Governance and Personnel Committee of Mayor Parrish, appointing in his place for the balance of the term that Mr. Parrish is abandoning, that Mayor Silverthorne abandoned before that, of Mayor-elect Meyer. But we can't have any meetings before next Tuesday or he won't be able to participate.
That's okay, because we're not meeting until after the session. So
excellent.
You're in good shape.
You're in good shape. Okay. So we will record those. And you have this piece of paper, so I don't need to hand it back. All right.
Mr. Chairman, no motion is required, as I understand that. But I want to thank Mayor-elect Meyer.
And we want to thank you for your excellent one-meeting service in that committee.
Pleased to serve.
All Thank you very much. Okay. That is all of our action items for this evening. But we want to get our legislative update, where we've had a good month, I think. Go to Ms. Hines and Ms. Stephanie.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to actually turn it over to Ms. Baird so she can give us the good news.
Thank you. It has been a very good month for the authority. Just remind everyone, we had sort of three primary things we wanted to accomplish this session. One was to preserve the current state of the authority, so protect our funding, keep our current, structure, make sure nothing would happen with that, make sure that they could move forward on establishing the Metro Safety Commission, and also for our friends over at the Transportation Commission, if we could fix the gas tax floor piece, that would be great too. So let's start with preserve the current state. Great success on that. The bills that we were most concerned about were summarily killed in the House and the Senate. I want to thank Chairman Noe for coming down and testifying twice out of his busy schedule. And there was a House bill 2137, which Delegate Lamonia was really understanding that while you're in the middle of updating transaction, but he would delay his bill. And what this bill now does, it's moving to the Senate now, is as of July 1, 2018, in your long-range plan, next time you update it, you would have to report your observations of any activity or obstacles to achieving its effectiveness. And also, right now, local governments are required to report to the MBTA anytime they update change their comprehensive plan in a way that would detract from one of the projects that you are funding. The MBTA would have to post that on your website. So that bill, after lots of amendment and talking to Delegate Lamayan, who was great about that. Also want to say that our two delegates, Delegate Minshew, who's on the phone, Delegate Hugo, were very helpful in House Transportation Committee in addressing the other bills of our concern.
Can I touch on this? Something that we can talk about after the session, and Delegate Minshew, I'd like you to be part of this conversation when the time comes. On the bill, Delegate Lemunyan's bill that has essentially started as one thing and turned into something quite different, frankly. The bill, I don't think it's done, but the bill's going to pass.
Right.
Because we said it's fine now. And actually has a delayed enactment clause, so it doesn't apply to this transaction plan anyway, which is really, I think, the key thing we wanted to get to. But the other bill being the bill that deals with the towns. There's two issues that I want to share on that. This was the bill that would have taken the vote, the seat that Ms. Mayor Burke sits in now, and made that a voting position, which, as we've discussed, creates some constitutional problems that could affect our bonding. The House Transportation Committee, once again, decided, no, we're not moving forward with this bill, as they've sort of been the dead end for that bill over the years. Two things came out of it. One was, based on my discussions with Delegate Keene, who was the patron of the bill again this year, we need to have some dialogue with the mayors, so I'll look to you for help in this. Because as we've said before, and as I said in front of multiple committees multiple times, we want the towns to be fully engaged in the decision-making process and in the discussion and to have the appropriate influence. We need to do it in a manner that doesn't create potential legal challenges for us. And I think there are some ways to do that that may not be exactly what has been discussed in the past, but might help with that. And so Delegate Keene has agreed to participate in some discussions between this body, the mayors, and others on things we may be able to do within our own bylaws that don't require legislative change, that would provide a more clear voice for all of the towns, frankly. So we'll engage in that discussion. But the other thing that came out of both the House Transportation Committee on that bill, and it was specific to that bill this year, but I don't think it's really specific to that bill, and it actually came up to a small degree in the Senate Rules Committee, is legislators from outside of Northern Virginia are tired of dealing with bills that tinker with the structure of the MBTA. I mean, and there's been some every year. And, of course, I think we have said we are tired of dealing with bills that tinker with the structure of MBTA. And I would love for us to have some discussion with, I don't know with whom, but to figure out how to create a message that says, we're really trying to get the job done here. Let us improve some transit and build some roads. and stop having to spend so much time on legislative matters, because in the past we've heard from folks outside of our region saying, why are we spending so much time on this bill that none of us care about?
Right.
This year we started hearing it from Northern Virginia legislators.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think I put Senator Howell on the spot too much.
No, she said it.
Senator Howell said in Senate rules, why are we talking about this stuff again?
Mm-hmm.
And then made a motion to take that or something. And I think that, and I understand what, you know, there's a desire to make sure we get everything perfect. I've given up on perfect. I'm really a big fan of pretty good. And I think we're a little better than pretty good at this point. So that's something we need to work on a little bit. Because I think there's got to be some tools out there to get that message to the other 138 legislators who didn't say it from the dais.
On Metro Safety Commission, as you know, there's a Senate bill Senator Barker is carrying and a House bill with Delegate Lemonnier is carrying. And the bills are proceeding. They've both been on the consent agenda, meaning they've got no votes. However, the House bill is a little different. There was quite a bit of discussion on the House side, and I'll explain a little bit more how far that discussion is going, with basically how to fix Metro. But the underlying compact, the current operations of Metro, concerns about how it's spending money, all the things that we all know are going on with Metro need to be addressed as quickly as possible. And there is definitely a Northern Virginia delegation, all parties, who want Metro to work. There are folks outside of Northern Virginia who are like, what are you people doing up there? And, you know, get your house in order. So on the House side and House Transportation Committee, where you have a number of members who are either from Northern Virginia, Hampton Roads, and then you have sort of a Southwest contingent, the folks outside of Northern Virginia were very skeptical of the Metro Safety Commission, either not quite understanding what its role is, even though we were all talking about it. And I wanted to say that the Metro Safety Commission legislation was supported by local government and the Northern Virginia business community up here and advocates for transit across the state because of, as you know, the federal government has said, you know, they were going to reduce our transit funding for all transit systems until the Safety Commission is established. So there was a lot of buzz, advocates to move it forward. But for those who don't live here in Northern Virginia, a lot of doubt about Metro as we know it today. So Delegate Minshew, Delegate Lemonnier, Delegate Hugo were working with their colleagues, looking at the Metro Safety Commission bill and essentially looking to identify, or at least to put out there, that we as a region understand there are problems that need to be addressed. We're not forgetting the, you know, 50-year-old, 60-year-old compact, but you need to let this move forward. And negotiating with the administration, their colleagues across the aisle and other parts of the state, the House version of this bill has what's called an enactment clause. Enactment clauses are at the end of the bill. They don't always have the full force of the code, but they are important and sometimes will either delay action or direct agencies to do certain things. At the end of the House version of the Metro Safety Commission bill, there's a paragraph that directs the Secretary of Transportation along with the Northern Virginia Transportation Commission to look at a series of issues that have been pretty much what you would consider people want to take a look at as we figure out how to improve, fix, heal Metro. It does not interfere with the establishment of the Metro Safety Commission, but it is read as, or it is put there as a sense of the General Assembly, we have these concerns. Whether it's how they're spending money, do they have enough money for transport for safety, the governance system, labor, you know, the labor agreements, all of that is sort of a list. So that there is that. What's happening now, the Senate bill came out clean. It did not have that language in it. What's happening is those bills, again, as I said, passed each body. House bill passed the House 97-0. The Senate bill passed the Senate 40-0. And they have switched sides. What the House Transportation Committee has done is they have added their number 4 enactment to the Senate bill, and the Senate has yet to take up the House bill. So at some point, they will figure it out.
In the meantime, there are two language amendments in the House budget. And they are very interesting. One directs Secretary Lane to reach out to his colleagues in Maryland and D.C. and identify what are the critical issues that need to be addressed to, as I said, heal Metro. That's one language amendment. The second language amendment directs the secretary, along with the Northern Virginia Transportation Commission, what's sort of like the language that's in the bill, to reach out to their colleagues, look at the list of issues we think are concerned, and come up with a plan. Both of them require the secretary to report back to the General Assembly, one on a quarterly basis, one at least by, I think, November of this year, and then again, probably like April of next year. So what I will say is, and again, which was very interesting because while I believe those same concerns are on the Senate side, they were not verbal about it. They didn't want to put things in bills or in the subject. The House definitely wanted to make a statement that these issues need to be addressed, that Metro is sick, broken, and needs to be fixed. It's important. And that's kind of where we stand. So we will see how that results, what results we get by the end of the session. We've got 2 weeks and 2 days left. They adjourn February 25th. The two budgets in terms of other issues are very close. But they can finish with the budget very easily, and we will see whether those two amendments survive in the conference budget that goes to the governor. As I said, the language that's in the House version of the Metro Safety Commission bill has been signed off by Secretary Lane and Director Mitchell, so there's a very good chance that that will stay in the bill once it comes out of conference if it gets there. The budget language, I'm not so sure. Sometimes the Senate doesn't like to put too many of those things in the budget, but we shall see. And then the last thing I'll go over before I talk to take questions is, again, as you know, Northern Virginia Transportation Commission, along with the Hampton Roads Transportation Accountability Commission, have suffered from the fall in the gas prices because there's no floor as there is on the state level. The House bills to address this were once again summarily killed in House Finance Committee. On the Senate side, there is a Senate bill that combined the bill that Senator Peterson had and a bill that Senator Wagner from Virginia Beach has. That moved out of the Senate, I want to say, probably like 33-7 or so. It was an unanimous vote. That has now gone over to the House. Again, I'm not sure the House is there yet to fix that loophole. We're working it, and we'll see what will happen.
Do you think there's still a chance?
I think less than 30%, to be perfectly honest with you. I don't think the House Finance Committee probably got some of the staunchest anti-tax folks in the House on the committee. And it's an election year for the House. And some of them see it as a tax increase as opposed to fixing an oversight. And that literally is the line that you hear. It's an oversight or it's a tax increase. And we, you know, I don't want to tell you, I'm sorry. I wish I had better news, but I'm going to be realistic about this.
Elliot Minter, can you hear me? This is Chair Rand.
Yes, I can hear you fine. And I think your report is very good, Tracy, and thank you for your work.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Delegate Minter, this is Chair Randall. How are you?
Not bad, Chair Randall. Good to hear your voice.
So I wanted to first of all say thank you because I think that you and I have been kind of saying the same thing and singing the same song, which is that we really do have to just say that Metro has some issues and we really want to get it back to good. That it's obviously very important to the entire region and, in fact, the entire Commonwealth for Metro to be strong and stand up and working. But that doesn't mean you look past the issues that are there. And I do think that the amendments that you and Delegate Lemonyan put forward does just that. I also appreciate it that you put that language in, but didn't stop the Metro Safety Commission from going forward or looking for federal funds. I will say on the morning that the bill passed out of the House, I was down because I was in Baco, and the board of directors in Baco were just thrilled that this bill passed out. And to my surprise, the person that brought up the Metro issue and the person that first verbalized that Metro has got to be strong for Virginia was not anybody from Northern Virginia. It was the supervisor from Rockingham County. And so we had a board of directors meeting, a very good discussion about the importance to Metro going forward for the Commonwealth of Virginia. Out of that, Supervisor McKay, Supervisor Bulova, and I really talked about having a presentation that we give to the VACO board of directors in the fall that is based on the CAG Technical Advisory Committee's report that discusses how important Metro is to the revenue for the Commonwealth. Because if we can, you know, make sure that VACO's board of directors understand, and then they talk to their legislators, and then of course we have full understanding from our Northern Virginia legislators to the importance of Metro, I think we can get something moved. But I do think that what you, Delegate Minshew, and I have been talking about here in Loudoun is, you know, it's important. We have to fix it. We can't let it die. But at the same time, we absolutely cannot ignore the issues that are glaring in front of all of us. So thank you.
You're quite welcome, Chair Randall. I agree with everything you said. As Tracy mentioned, there was a original version of this enactment clause that cleared the House subcommittee that probably did raise some rankles because it was cross-collateralizing a WMATA compact reform with the establishment of the Metro Safety Commission. That was not supported by Secretary Lane and the administration, but it did convey the seriousness of the need to move forward with the WMATA compact. The final version of the enactment clause was one that Secretary Lane is very pleased with. He mentioned to me that he said, you know, now I've got a direct grant of authority and direction for me to go meet with my cohorts in the District of Columbia and Maryland to start the process of WMATA compact reform. So this enactment clause really is helpful to me because I can go up to talk to Maryland and D.C. and just say that my Commonwealth approved the Metro Safety Commission without condition. However, I've got very strong direction to work forward needed WMATA reforms. So in the end, I think everybody's quite happy with the way the bill went.
So then, if I may, so Delegate Minshew, just so I can understand, when Secretary Lane approaches his counterparts in the district and in Maryland, the language that was put in by you and Delegate Lemonyan, it does not hinder the Metro Safety Commission from going forward. I ask that because if at any time you get any pushback from somebody in Maryland or in the district of looking at any part of the compact, would it still go forward? That's a yes.
Yes, the Metro Safety Commission.
Would still go forward. Okay. Yeah. All right. Delegate,
yes, Metro Safety Commission.
Yes. This is such a good job, and it's really nice to have the localities and our assembly members on the same page, and I really do appreciate it. When you come back, I do want to sit down and meet with you about a meeting I had with Mayor Bowser about this issue. I will talk to the authority members, but I also want to talk to you about that when you get back.
I would look forward to that, and thank you, Chair Randall. I don't know if Tracy mentioned this, but we did, when we had the Senate version of the Metro. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, I want to mention that this morning in House Transportation, we had the Senate version of the Metro Safety Commission bill that Senator Barfor is carrying. And I want to mention that the House version of the bill had what is called an emergency clause, which means it becomes law the day the governor signs the bill instead of the usual day, which is July the 1st. At the request of Secretary Lane, we're taking off that emergency clause
and I'm assuming you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the authority, the reason we put that in there is that we had this February 9 deadline to show Congress they were moving forward on the Metro Safety Commission, and we thought the emergency clause showed that we were serious in Virginia in doing that. It's interesting that the administration came back and said, you know, if you put an emergency clause on it and there's any change from D.C. and Maryland on the agreement, we'd have to have a special session of the General Assembly to amend it. So we took off the emergency clause just to protect it in the event that Maryland or D.C. wanted to tinker with text in this agreement. So there's nothing nefarious there. It was done as a friendly move, just so if there was any, you know, wordsmithing that Maryland, D.C. required, we would not have to have a special session of the General Assembly because we're adjourning on February 25th. Back to you, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Bulova and then Mr.
Schneider. So, Sharon Bulova here, and I would like to add my thanks to you, Delegate Minshew. And you gave me an early iteration of what was introduced and showed me at the NBTC meeting the current language. I think I'll frame that because it's a real demonstration of, you know, an understanding and your understanding of what was needed in order to pass that critical transportation bill or safety bill, metro safety bill, and yet inject the common sense things that all of us know we need to do to address the problems with Metro. So I think we're all committed to making that happen. And I think the language that you inserted in the enactment clause, I think is excellent and something that certainly Fairfax County is in agreement with and will work toward. And that language does not hold up the establishment of the Safety Commission. So I would just like to say thank you. I think that that you did a super job, and we're looking forward to continuing to work on the WMATA issue, and I know that that's something that members of the General Assembly need to know and need to hear, because this is not the end, and we'll be coming back and needing more help from the General Assembly and from the state, and so your colleagues need to know that we're taking the safety issues seriously and the governance issues and the structure of Metro seriously, and that we're pursuing making changes and making improvements to that.
Well, thank you, Chair Bulova. I appreciate your thoughts on
totally. Dave Snyder, I'd just like to indicate total agreement with my colleagues who have already thanked you and Delegate Lemonyan for your work on this. I think there's one other factor that's critically important. By including coordination with the Northern Virginia Transportation Commission, you're assuring that the affected localities and key delegates will be involved at the working level. So that was also a key part of what you did, along with the other merits of what you did indicated by my colleagues. So thank you, Delegate Minshew, and pass on my regards to Delegate Lemonyan.
Well, then, Mr. Schneider, thank you, sir.
Yeah. Tracy, anything else for us?
No, that's it for right now. I said we've got the signing die adjourned February 25th, coming fast and furious. So hopefully everything will stay the way we have it right now, and we'll be done in 2 weeks.
And we do thank the Senate, I mean, for working on this as well.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Focus on the House, and appreciate that work, but we also thank the work of our senators.
That's right.
So moving on to the agenda, PPC report was the action item. I don't see Mr. Boyce or Mayor Foreman, so I'm going to assume that the TAC and PCAC reports are in the packet.
They are in the packet, and I would like to say that we have not had any quorum issues with the TAC or the PCAC. We were getting a really great turnout, and their participation and input is really critical in the process.
Ms. Batman, you got a report for us?
Briefly, Mr. Chairman, I would like to note that we were going to have the media availability event on the tracking survey that Mr. Alsop went over an hour or so ago.
Big snow.
Because of this great snow winter blizzard.
Storm of the century of the week.
We rescheduled this event for Wednesday, February the 15th at 10 a.m. So, and actually some media outlets did contact us yesterday and say, hey, we want to make sure that we're there, but we're concerned about the blizzard. So we did. Also to know, as you all know, Smart Scale, the draft scenarios was released on January 17th, and the CTB is supposed to take action in June on the final Smart Scale recommendations. And lastly, before I close, with every executive director's report, I do a project status update of every project that the authority has funded with an approved standard project agreement. All of your projects now have approved standard project agreement. And what I would like to do is just draw your attention to the last column regarding percentage reimbursed. It says November 31st of 17, because we're really projecting out. No, that's a typo. But I do want you to know that these projects are advancing. And even if you see in some cases that they haven't withdrawn or submitted a request for reimbursement for MBTA revenues, a lot of your projects have multiple funding sources. And a lot of the federal funding sources have sunset provisions on them. So the projects are using those funding sources first. But we have projects that are in various stages of completion. For those that are not and those that are lagging, we will be contacting the sponsoring entity. And that's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
My only comment, and I feel like every year we work so hard at getting the calendar to have no conflicts, and every year we screw it up. We being NEMA. Next month's meeting is March 9th, and I don't think that's a problem. Our April meeting is April 13th, which is Maundy Thursday, and is the fourth night of Passover. And for some of us, it's in the middle of spring break, and for others, it isn't. And I'm not going to worry about the spring break part. Anyone here have kids in public school? Sorry, I'm going to mess you up on spring break.
My wife is a public school teacher. Okay. Texas County.
Is she on before Easter or after Easter for spring break?
It's between Palm Sunday and Easter.
Oh, fantastic. So that makes it a great reason to move the meeting to the 20th. I don't think... moving from the 13th, which is of April, I'm sorry, of April, which is our normal second Thursday, and move it to the third Thursday, which tends not to conflict. There aren't any other big regional meetings on the third Thursday that I know of.
I'll be out of town. Yeah, we have a budget markup session, which may go.
Okay, and that is not awesome. We've got some time to figure this out. We'll put out some information.
Great if you can do it right now, but if you can't.
Let's not try to work it out tonight. Yep. We're running later than I like to. So we'll send out some possible dates and solicit feedback. I recognize we won't be able to get everyone no matter what night we pick because of the season.
Right.
So
budget season for us.
Well, then it's the budget season that's everything.
I think that's what happened last year. We canceled April. It was 2 years ago. Consider that
if there's no important action item.
We'll figure it out. Yeah. Be aware, we're in flux for April.
Right.
Okay. Any other business to come before the authority this evening?
Chairman, just a very quick one for all the members of the Finance Committee. We have a meeting on Thursday next week, 1 o'clock, right here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Excellent. Hearing nothing else, we are adjourned. Thank you, everybody. Good night. Drive safe.